This is the third and final session talking about adoption-related issues, and today's focus is on adoptive families, and I'm glad to see that you adoptive families have come back today, because I'm going to rely on you heavily to help me out. Session number one, just as a quick review, was about adoptees' perspective and the question of who am I and identity issues for adoptees. And yesterday we talked about a birth mother's perspective and reunion questions or the search, what happens in initiating a search, how does a search take place, and what happens after a search is completed. And then today, I have highlighted kind of the five different areas that I would like to address. We'll see if we're able to cover all of them. I forgot to mention yesterday something that had to do with our topic of reunions, reunion experiences, and that kind of thing. In this book, Lost and Found, which I think I mentioned, I did not have the bookstore order, but I recommend highly. A great portion of her book, I would say a third of this book, is about the search process, who conducts searches, and she has a chapter on varieties of reunion experiences and unsuccessful searches and what happens after reunions. And so if you have a particular interest in that, or you have a child that you might want to guide through a search, I would really recommend this book. So if you want to come up and take a look at it and get the publisher and whatnot, it's here. Also, this is in the bookstore. This is my article on adoption contracts and adult adoptees' right to identity. This is mostly a legal perspective, I think I had mentioned. Something that is in here that we haven't discussed at all, and if you're interested in it, I just wanted to let you know, I talk a little bit about surrogacy and particularly the Baby M case in this article, and someone had approached me and said, what do you think about surrogacy? And if you're interested in knowing more about surrogacy, especially the legal aspects of it, that's in here. And this is the book that I've just been relying on heavily throughout, The Adoption Triangle, which I think is just quite it's a well-written book by a doctor and two social workers who specialize in adoption, and they look at all three. It's particularly a book on the psychological dynamics of all three of the different parties in the adoption relationship. So that's what I've been relying on in the books that I would recommend if you're interested in exploring this in greater detail. So today, adoptive families, what do we say? I want to start out by saying I am not a parent. And I'm a little bit sad about that, but you know, maybe someday I'll get lucky. But I have to acknowledge, I know that being a parent must be a very insecure proposition. And I'm sure that's true for anybody, whether you're an adoptive parent or you're not an adoptive parent. It just seems to me like there are a lot of struggles these days in being a parent. And my perception is that often families who have adoptive children are plagued with a kind of perfectionism. I don't know exactly what that's about, but it seems to me like people who choose to adopt are people who set very high standards for themselves as parents. I perceive this about my parents, that they took their role in parenting very, very seriously. And the stakes were very high for them. They wanted to do it all right. And maybe that's true for all parents, but I particularly perceive that adoptive parents want to do it right, and they take their roles very, very seriously as parents. And I think part of that earnestness about being the perfect parent is heightened by the whole adoption process itself. And I hope that some of you parents can help me address that today. But having heard my own parents talk about their really trying experiences just to obtain an adopted child gives me a great deal of empathy for what that situation must be like, and that you probably come at it feeling even more as though the stakes are very high in being perfect parents. So that's the first thing I wanted to say. And is there anybody who'd just like to address that generally right now about insecurities in parenting?
Well, I think the issue of how difficult it is to adopt, or the psychological struggles that you're put into, I can really identify with that. My husband and I are both ordained. I was ordained in 1974. I've worked through institutions, know how to write forms, know how to deal with big bureaucracies. I'm a Presbyterian pastor, so I know about big bureaucracies. And I never found anything more difficult than jumping through the adoption hoops in my entire life. And I don't think we would have been able to make it if it hadn't been for two Lutheran co-pastors who are our closest friends now, who are also attempting to adopt at the same time through the same agency. And we were very close to them. If we weren't in regular support group with them, I don't think we could have made it. Psychologically, I thought it was just the hardest thing, the most difficult thing, with very little helps along the way that I've ever encountered.
And my perception about that also is that it's becoming harder in some ways. I think because, anyway, when my parents chose to adopt me back in the 50s, there were many, many more children available, as was my understanding in that. Now I hear from friends who are trying to adopt that it can take years and years and years to have that happen. So. Another thing that I just, it maybe doesn't apply, this is just kind of for my own information. I'm always interested in knowing people's reasons for adopting. Most of the literature, which unfortunately is I feel a little outdated, talks a lot about infertility as a reason for adopting. And it was actually the reason that my parents chose to adopt me, was because they thought they were infertile, and then they found out they were not later. And I think it was a bigger reason back in maybe 10, 20 years ago. Now my perception from my contemporaries who are adopting is that it's an alternative in building a family. A lot of people feel as though, because of kind of concerns about overpopulation, that they don't want to have more than two children, and so, but wanting to have large families, they choose adoption as a way to expand and have a large family without contributing to world overpopulation. Another thing I've heard from contemporary friends is having a special interest in a particular child's background. I know I have a number of friends who are trying to adopt Native American children, which is very nearly impossible these days to do. The laws are very strict about that. The Native American community feels very strongly that their children should stay in their community. But I have also perceived that. Are there other reasons that I haven't heard? I'd just be curious to know. Yeah.
Reasons for adopting? I was pregnant seven times in the first 3 years I was married. I have four live births, those seven pregnancies. Three of my daughters are here. You've probably seen them. My fourth daughter died 3 months. The doctor thought we shouldn't have any more children. And so it was, in a way, infertility too. But 6 years later, we decided to adopt. And at that time, we did request a boy.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. That also I have heard is that sometimes you can choose the sex of the child, and that for some people, they don't like that.
And so we adopted because we decided we wanted to have a son.
Any other stories? Yeah.
We had two sons and a daughter, and this was about 1969, and at that time we were wanting to have one more child, but we're hoping to have another daughter. And it was also a time, I don't know about the rest of the country, but in Minnesota, and there was a big push then for Korean adoptions and interracial adoption. And so we applied in December, and we had a daughter within 6 months that really went fast. And I don't know that kind of adoptions are happening very much anymore, but at that time they were just eager for anybody that would take a child.
I think Minnesota has been a state that has really welcomed a lot of Korean orphans, and I think I heard that there are more Korean children in the Twin Cities area than in any other place in the United States, except maybe San Francisco or something like that. There's a really strong Korean adoptive community in the Twin Cities, and I know a lot of people who have Korean adoptees there. Yes.
LSS in Minnesota brought in about almost 3,000. Mm-hmm. However, they've closed it off completely now. Their channels in through Korean social service have really dried up because mm-hmm. the Korean government has put the restrictions on it. We have two kids that are going to a different agency in town to adopt a Korean child. They've got a 2-year process, and then mm-hmm. no promises really. With $8,000 on the line, so it's uh-huh. a difficult process.
Yes.
So a little variation. I'm a single woman, and I'm in the process of adopting. Deciding years ago that at some point, I don't think I'm too old to get married or too old to give up on marriage, but I can't choose marriage, and I can't choose to be a mother, and so I'm going, I'm not going to pick up any man and have a baby with, so. There certainly are, that's the reason there's so many children out there who do need a home of some sort, so there's a lot more single people doing that too.
I guess the reason that my husband and I adopted our two was the fact that we had them as foster children. And now these are Native American children.
Oh, okay.
And we had them as foster children at their ages of 4 and 6. And there was no...
no restrictions, and it wasn't difficult
well,
to adopt them.
Well, but they were about to be taken back because the mother hadn't married, she had quite a few, several children, and keeping them as foster children hangs them in limbo. Mm-hmm. They were Greeleys and we were Stilsons, and how come, and all this sort of thing. So then we applied for adopting them, and we didn't have any trouble at all adopting them.
That was 23 years ago.
Yeah.
It changed now. Like you say now, Native Americans are not.
And I always remember what the judge told us, that you may be the last Native American children to be adopted, without any real problems. And our boy goes, phew.
Our experience is a little bit like that, and part of it, Sylvia had got her master's in social work at Chicago Child Care, or Fieldwork was at Chicago Child Care. And that was the so-called difficult to adopt child, a lot of children with medical problems. But black children and mixed racial children were placed in the difficult to adopt category. And as part of our marriage contract, she said we will someday adopt children, because she couldn't bear to see these children go without family, some of them 7 and 8 still in foster care or in institutional care. Mm-hmm. So after we'd had 3 kids on schedule, we applied first to a Lutheran social service in Iowa. I was teaching at Orkberg at that time, and we had about 3 interviews, and we just decided they don't want us to do this. They just don't want us. So then we went back to Chicago Child Care. That was for Sarah, and that's 21 years ago. And at that time, we were just oh, so many children available. So we wanted a girl, because we had two boys and one girl. And so we got this very, very carefully matched girl in terms of background. They were very careful about that. And my wife's mother had said, okay, if one black child, then two, because I don't want any grandchild of mine to be just sitting there alone. So very soon we applied for a boy. And the difference was that in the time between Sarah's birth and Eric, the whole black community in Chicago and elsewhere had decided they were going to do some adopting. And then also, there was a whole time there when mothers were keeping their babies. Mm-hmm. And they were going to, and then 3 years later, the children were rejected. Mm-hmm. So we waited for 3 years for Eric.
Was he just a baby?
Yep. Sarah was 3 weeks old, and Sarah and Eric was about 3 weeks old. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they were both. See, ours were 4 and 6, but they came as foster children. Yeah.
And then after, that was our family, and then afterwards we had a surprise. So we had 6.
That all just leans on number 3, that struggles in the adoption process. It's
tricky. Yeah, let's turn to number 3 about struggles in the adoption process. What I hear again and again from my parents and from other birth parents that I've or other adopted parents I've had the privilege of talking with about this is that you're put under such close scrutiny by so-called experts in parenting, and they talk a lot about the home study, and even that word has kind of this negative connotation to it, where they came in and were so closely scrutinized. And at least my parents tell me that the home study of them went on not only before I was placed in the home, but the year following. And I even get the impression it was after I was walking, which gives me the impression that I might have been around 2 before the social worker stopped visiting them. And that it was always a terrifying time when she would come to visit, because they always had the feeling that she might be able to take me away again. Even though my understanding of the law, and having studied it now, is that really after the adoption process is finalized, there is no way that a social agency can take a child away unless you are found to be unfit parents, which is a very, very high legal standard to meet. And adoptive parents simply really are not the type of people that are going to have that kind of a problem. But my mother tells me about a time that I was wearing little jean overalls, and I had been out playing in the garden or out in the patio, and I was covered with dirt. And the social worker dropped by unexpectedly, and my mother cried. I mean, she was just sitting there and sobbing because she thought the fact that I was dirty and in little overalls was an indication that I was being neglected, when probably I was never happier than out eating crickets in the backyard, which I'm sure I was doing that day. I've also, in doing the legal research on this, I have found many court cases by adoptive parents against social service agencies for misrepresentation about either things that they've said in terms of following up, or in information they have given the adoptive parents about the child, which later turned out to be untrue. And some of those are very, very sad cases where the child has a terminal illness and the parents were not informed and the child dies, or the child has a mental history or something like that, or the parents were in mental institutions and they weren't told, or the birth parents were in mental institutions, and many sad court cases about that kind of thing. I have just, it's a very minor misrepresentation, certainly nothing to sue about, but we were talking this week about my ancestry. Someone asked me, well, really, what did your heritage turn out to be? My name, as you may know, is Heidi Schneider. It's very German, and I grew up in a southwestern Minnesota community, lots of Germans there, and my family is very German. They came from Milwaukee, and we spoke kind of Plattdeutsch in the home as a joke, and I took German in high school, and I was a German exchange student, and I really identified very strongly with being German. And then, I should add that the adoption agency told my parents, we're placing this child with you because her ancestry is German. And when I met my birth mother and birth father, they come from New Orleans, Louisiana, and have always lived in New Orleans, Louisiana, and my ancestry is French and Spanish, and if you look at me, I don't think it's all that surprising, really, that was my background, and I don't feel gypped about that. I mean, it really doesn't matter to me a great deal what my ancestry is, but I find it amusing that my name is Heidi Schneider, and I have no German background at all. But the adoption agency, for some reason, told my parents that, and it just seems kind of, I guess it's not that uncommon that little discrepancies and sometimes larger discrepancies happen sometimes in the placement of children. Another thing that I perceive, maybe it's not as true now, but I think maybe it was true back a ways, is a conflict for adoptive parents with their community or their own parents, in other words, the grandparents of the adopted child, that there might be some resistance to adopting a child. I've heard this especially from families who've had mixed race children, that sometimes there's resistance from friends or church community or especially their own parents on either side. I don't know if any of you had that kind of experience, but that seems very sad to me when, you know, you're venturing out very much on your own. It makes the adoptive family maybe a little more insular in some ways too, if you're not getting support from your community. I don't know if that's as true now. I think adopting children is becoming a more common form of family building, so maybe it's not a big deal, but I know it was for my parents as well, especially from my dad's family. They were very resistant to the fact that an outsider was being brought into the family. I hope I haven't disappointed them too much. The other, and I think you mentioned it, is the financial outlay, especially these days. I understand it's just a very, very expensive proposition. And that, of course, raises the stakes when you're putting a lot of money down to have a child. I'd just be interested to know if any of you care to share about that. Is it still true that it costs a lot of money to adopt children? It was not so much so for my parents back in the 50s. I understand it was not very expensive.
Because we adopted through the state welfare agency.
Uh-huh.
So that would be a difference. I think through LSS or some of those, now I don't know how expensive it is. Some of you folks would probably relate more to that.
Well, when we went through adoption, we went through Children's Services to start with. It's a state service in Oregon, and it was free. But we also went, we did that and we did the home study, we also went through a private lawyer. And I visited all the gynecologists in town, and that's where we ended up getting our child. But so we just had to pay the doctor's fees and the lawyer's fees. So it was like $2,000.
Oh,
but that was
okay.
10 years ago.
Uh-huh.
But we could have gotten one free through Children's Services.
Mm-hmm.
But that was 10 years ago. I don't know if that's still true.
And even the private agency in Oregon wasn't very expensive when we adopted. It's become more expensive now. But state services are free. All these years.
And when I first started talking with the state services, the woman I talked to told me outright that their focus is foster parenting,
mm-hmm.
and that they do the adoptive service, you know, the home studies and everything, free. You know, like it's free, but it's a very, very, very long process because that's not their focus.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting.
She just told me that. She says it depends upon how fast you want, you know, but it's. It is a long process because we have few people working for many, many children that are being pulled out of their homes because of CPS cases and everything. It's a
Is that?
Is that in Washington?
Washington, Washington.
Mm-hmm. That's part of the adoption struggle and process, though, is that you're told there's these 8-10 year waits. There's, you know, blah blah blah, and you're not given any hope along the way. But if you stay with it, and we found if you worked out little gimmicks, it goes fairly rapidly. In fact, we were with state services, and they kept telling us, oh no, we can't promise anything, no, no, no. They give us these deadlines, we were breaking these deadlines. It wasn't very fast, but they kept breaking their what we considered their commitment, so we shifted. But we didn't know that they were really soon to be placing a child with us. And it was really a short, very short time, even though they told us it could be years. And so that was the real double messages that you get. And so we've encouraged people that really want to do it to stay with it and to keep persistent, and it will happen. But even though they tell you it's not going to happen, everybody we knew adopted within about a year.
Mm-hmm. And we had the same thing.
And they were all instant.
It'd be a long time. We had Sarah in 9 months.
Yeah, we had one in a year, one in 9 months, and then the other two that we were supporting was about 9 months and a year too. And these were all healthy infants. They're not hard to adopt children. But they kept telling you. I mean, we had asked for lots of different options. But God, that's another strange thing. We asked for multiracial children. We asked for lots of different handicaps. And all of us had done that, all the two families that were together with us. And that didn't happen. I mean, it didn't happen in any of our homes. Mm-hmm. So that was odd, too. So we found a lot of that stuff, the double messages stuff, was very stressful and very strange when we look back on it now.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe they were just seeing how. It may have been just like I remember we went that home study process with them. I don't think we finished it.
No, we did.
Did we finish it?
We finished it one day and got Sarah the next.
It was just, but we didn't get it to the agency though. No, it was through a different source. But they're just taking time. They're just taking time.
I also think they want to see how willing you are to get a child.
Oh, I think
it's the willingness.
Because if you put a real tight limit on what you'll take,
they're looking for some commitment.
They're looking for commitment.
Was it a spur of the moment thing? I found the home study process very affirming.
You did?
Yes.
Please talk about that. I'd love to hear some of your data.
Our caseworker, we went through LSS, and our caseworker was just very supportive. I think we learned a lot about each other through the process, and we felt sort of like, well, we really are an okay family. it was a good process. Mm. And there again, I think we were told that it would take probably a year or so, this is 23 years ago, to expect that it will take at least a year or so. Mm-hmm. And we brought David home in 3 months.
I had a really good experience too with the home study.
Oh, good.
Just a wonderful woman. She came in and sat down. She said, well, I always start out by saying that I'm going to assume that you're approved unless we find a problem. And if we do, you probably knew about it already, and we just need to work through it and figure out. And that's the way she started out, and she's just a wonderful person, dude. I wanted her to come back again because she was so affirming.
Oh, yeah. That does sound like a lovely way to start out by saying we're going to assume that you
were here. And, you know, it's just like, you know, we need to figure out all the questions that maybe you haven't thought about and stuff was the way she approached it. And so,
well, I would have a question for you then. Do you think that as a single parent it's considerably more difficult to adopt a child than for a couple? Are you finding this, or do you feel that in the process that you've been working through?
It takes a little bit more legwork because some agencies don't work with singles. And some agencies will work with singles but don't have the experience. And so, you know, that's part of the search of, you know, who do you want to go with, and just asking different questions. I think that it's much, if I were asking for a newborn white child, that's very unrealistic. That I would feel
it's not drug addicted.
It's not drug addicted.
Yeah.
You know, but I am choosing an older child. There's lots of
mixed race or no preference or whatever.
Mm-hmm. So, No problem, you know. It's again, someone said it's a matter of how choosy you are. How long it takes.
Yeah.
I don't know if this has been mentioned in other sessions because it's the first one we've attended, but it fits under struggles, I think, and it certainly needs to be said if it hasn't been said, and that is that one of the, you know, the real current buying occurrence that we, for adoptive, potential adoptive parents, as we have experienced it with our kids, is of course the whole abortion issue. The fact that the children, the market has dried up, I mean the source has dried up because of the millions of killed infants. And the struggle within our kids about that, they've always been anti-abortion, but they have just become angered, you know, by it, because of the whole delays of getting children, and then others are killing them as well. And I think that's one of the struggles, you know, that they're really experiencing. It's a struggle within themselves.
And we have not talked about that, but that is certainly an aspect of this whole thing. And I think the other situation, of course, is that many young women now are choosing to keep their children as single parents, and I think that also is more acceptable, and there's more support for single parents these days than there was back when my birth mother. There just were no options at that time. It's just not. I mean, the mores have changed so that it's not as shameful, and women can continue to go to school or whatever. And yeah.
One of the issues that we had when we were going through the adoption process was we were talking to the state agency, and we would then start to talk to go through another avenue. And I felt at the time a certain loyalty to stay with one kind of adoption agency or one kind of adoption process. And I felt kind of guilty by, he was asking questions, and, you know, I felt like I should at times tell him, you know, we were going through another agency. But in retrospect, I think you should, I think you should go through as many processes as you can do well in the adoption process. If you're afraid of not being successful, say, if there's any doubt in your mind about being successful with one agency, you know, go through as many agencies or different kinds of ways of doing it. I don't feel like, because I think there's a sense of loyalty that you start to develop with these caseworkers, and it's not necessarily well-founded. Because it's just their job, and with you it's a completely different kind of emotional thing. They have some of the feelings, but I don't think you should be afraid. There's a loyalty that develops, and you should be careful there in that situation, because you are looking out for your best interest, which is to get a baby. And in our situation, it turned out that the situation worked.
Which is a perfect lead into how I just wanted to close this section on struggles in the adoption process, which is that it seems these days people are finding more and more alternatives to the kind of usual adoption process that probably a lot of you went through, and that is by bypassing the system entirely and using surrogacy. I think is something that we're seeing a lot more. Artificial insemination, women who find somebody else who can make them pregnant, especially for single people. I think this is an option. I see more and more women who find a friend who will help them have a baby so that they can avoid all the struggles that go on in adoption. One other thing that I wanted to mention is something called open adoption, which is being used more and more by some agencies, in which the birth mother actually selects and knows who the child is going to be placed with, and is given certain rights, and the contract is set up in such a way so that she has visitation rights to the child, even though the child is legally adopted by someone else. And I personally see this as a big direction that adoption is going to take. And so we're going to see more and more interesting legal contracts happening with birth mothers. I think birth mothers right now have a lot more clout in terms of saying what's going to happen with their children. And if they want to stay in contact, these days there are more and more ways that they can do that, and that it's being legitimized legally, and in social service agencies are opting for open adoption more and more as well. And there's disputes about whether that's good for the adoptive child, which leads to number four, bonding. Open adoption, it does leave questions about, you know, what happens with the bonding with adoptive parents. I would like us to break up into small groups for just about 5 minutes, and I have three questions I'd like you to think about that have to do with bonding, and then we'll get back together and talk a little bit about bonding. The first one is I'd like to have you talk about how do you bond as a family, and think of a specific example of when you think about family bonding, what does that mean to you as a family? And I'm thinking about a whole group. And then secondly, how do you bond with one other person? And in this particular context, I'd like you to think about parent-child. And it can be an adopted child or it can be a non-adopted child, but I'd just like to know what, and give a specific example of a time you experienced bonding with a particular individual parent-child kind of relationship. And then this is a third one that may seem kind of off the wall, but I just want to throw it out and see where it leads us. What is your earliest memory? And is that a bonding, would you characterize that as a bonding type memory? Is the third one. So if you could just break up into, you know, comfortable small groups, maybe 3, 4.
I think a common experience in our group was that the siblings that were already a part of the family were a real significant part to the bonding process. That's what that got the children into the more than the parent. The parent bonding, but the bonding of the family was with the siblings.
That the children are close to one another, you're saying.
That they became a part and learned the family rules, the family systems, the family process.
Mm-hmm. Maybe kind of gang up against the parents.
Oh, always.
Yeah. Yeah, we did that too. Yeah, we did that too. Anything else?
We mentioned just all kinds of ways of wanting to be together in our group. Wanting to be together, enjoying chores, doing dishes together, somebody mentioned. Meal time as a real special time of wanting to be together. All kinds of recreational stuff. Reading. But basically it was a theme of wanting and enjoying being together.
Mm-hmm. We felt that adopting was a real advantage. We felt sorry for our friends who had their second child biologically or adopted, one is in the middle. And we took our first child, who was only 20 months old, with us. And Becca was always her baby. And there was never, until they were old enough to conflict over, you know, different wants, there was never any of the jealousy that our other friends who were having their second biological child at the same time we were adopting were having these terrible problems with the first child, and we didn't have any of that. And so we felt that the adoption was a significant advantage in the bonding process.
That puts kind of a new twist on this one, mm-hmm. kind of a
a sense of possession,
mm-hmm.
yeah, between the siblings.
Yes.
I guess we had some of that too, because the girls were seven, Liz was seven and the twins were six. And we were all going through the homesteading, the planning, and the adoption process to, as a family of five of us getting a new baby brother. And so
yeah.
it was definitely
yeah,
a family
did.
Project.
Yeah.
And then we kept an album that showed, I mean, that we would sit and look at with the kids all sat and looked at. It was just on a coffee table of, you know, the kids getting ready for David to come. And that was, I mean, that's something I'd already done with the girls, and we just added him to it, of course. And I think that album was used an awful lot, and the kids would look at it.
Mm-hmm.
And talk about, remember the day we brought him home, and
uh-huh.
so forth.
Mm-hmm.
How about parent-child bonding experiences?
Just the touching and the holding and the feeding, basic caring.
We were comparing that a little bit in this group too, that the ones, all of them were very young, but there was a certain institutionalization that had already taken place, even though our daughter was only 14 days old. And I felt the bonding process was sort of part of that process of seeing her no longer being an institutional child.
I had nursed my girls, and I held him a lot and rocked him.
Mm-hmm.
And tried to give him maybe more holding even than the others had gotten, because I wanted to build that bond.
Mm-hmm.
It was sort of like holding him enough time the first year.
To hold them in them days.
Well, but I did. I always was a little bit unusual,
yeah.
and I was there too.
I can't remember which of these books talks about it, but one of them mentions that that story time or bedtime is a real bonding between parent and child, and that often that is the child. This is coming to number five, talking about adoption. That is often the time when the questions come up, is that time of parent-child bonding, often at bedtime. You know, ask, you know, tell me a story about how you got me. You know, tell me a story about where I came from. Anything else?
That comes up even when they're older. My daughter is 25 now, and we went out to lunch a few months ago, and the discussion came up again then, and we shared more on the feelings that there were and the situation at that time. It has been, rather than a single occasion of telling her, it has been a continuous reading process, but that she really wants to know about.
Yes.
I think sensing the spiritual power in adoption, I think for me it was probably one of the most powerful spiritual experiences in my life. And I've heard people that have birthed children say that.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly adoption was an incredible spiritual miracle, really.
Mm-hmm.
And the pieces of that, and looking at the children and thinking that truly God really was a part of this process and wanted these children to be in our home, in our children. And that sense of that is very powerfully bonding, I think, in our family.
Yeah.
Even as we're dealing with issues of birth parents, we're still talking about God really wanting us to be, and that birth parent is a part of our life maybe now, more and more too, that sense that we're connected. And I think everything spiritually that's really amazing to me is that we are connected in a real powerful way with another person, another family system that we're not biologically related to. But to me, it's a sense of our connection with others in the world, and that spiritual connection, and the joy of that, and the mystery of that, that we're connected to another family that we don't know, and we have, you know, a real special bond with that family, and that family history, and that, you know, all that goes on with that other family history. To me, that's a real powerful spiritual thing in terms of our connection with the world, too.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that. I threw that last question out as kind of a wild card. Did anybody have an earliest memory?
Yeah, we want to do
that.
I just remember the wallpaper by the crib. Was able to describe it to my parents, and they said, yes, they remember the wallpaper.
That's really interesting.
I don't think it had anything to do with bonding.
No. I will share my, I asked this question also because my parents cannot believe this, but my earliest memory is of the actual adoption proceeding.
Wow.
If you can imagine, I mean, and maybe this is why I ended up in law, but my earliest memory is of being held in my mother's arms, and I think I was maybe 18 months old when this happened, or 16 months, something like that. My memory is being held in my mother's arms. It's very cold. I remember I'm feeling cold, and the room is very dark, and we're standing in front of a big bench, and there's a man behind it dressed in black. And I described this early memory to my mother at one point, and she said, no way. There's just no way you can possibly remember this. And I said, well, you mean it really happened? And she said, well, I think it's probably your adoption. And she went back in an old photo album, sure enough, there's the picture of, and my mother actually was pregnant at the time. It's a very touching picture to me because she's pregnant with my next sister, and she's holding me, and she's, you know, she's holding me out here because she's rather large. And there's the judge in the black robes, and I was only about 16 months, and that is my first memory. And I had never seen that picture. I mean, it was far away, but I did, and it was cold because it was in November in Minnesota, so it was probably cold that day when I had been outside. But I've even heard people mention earliest memories going way back to being close to being born. You know, that some people can even remember not actually being born, but can remember hospital. You know, like being in the hospital or being held by a parent.
I'll have to ask my daughter that because she was that same age, and we went to court, and the three boys, and the judge had the boys sit in the jury box, and he talked to them about their responsibilities toward this little girl.
Wow.
And they, you know, he really laid it on, and all the other people in the courthouse came into because they said they have so many miserable situations in court, and this was such a happy age. They all came to join me.
We only have a couple of minutes left in talking about adoption, which in some ways I think is maybe communication is a big problem in adoptive families. I don't know if it is or not. And I think I had mentioned in an earlier session that a lot of psychologists are debating now about whether children should even be told that they're adopted because of this bonding question, that they think, you know, that there's like a proper time to tell a child that they're adopted. You know, I don't know the answer to that. And I'm sure that each of you and your families have dealt with this question in great detail, but I imagine that talking about adoption issues is you know, it's got to be a big part of what it's like. And I think it's the Lost and Found book where she talks about the questions coming up at bedtime, because I remember doing that too and asking to be told the story again and again about, well, tell me about how you got me, and tell me about, you know, how you made this decision, and tell me about this. And so for me, it was not a difficult
Did you ever have any feelings of bitterness towards your natural mother?
Yes, a great deal.
See, we were talking about that, and especially the girls were very, very bitter towards their birth mother.
Yeah. Bitter is an interesting word. It's not, looking back on it as an adult now, I think that's probably what I was feeling.
Anger
is right. I think I would characterize it as not caring. That I just didn't care about her. I remember thinking that, I don't care. I don't care about
her. She had a hard time forgiving her. And,
she didn't care about me. I don't care about her is kind of the, I think. And it did, and I've mentioned this so many times, but I'll say it again. It took me till age 30 to decide that it was okay, that I did want to find her. And I just had no interest at all. In fact, I had no interest in talking about this issue. And for those of you adoptive parents who have come to me this week and said, you know, my child is just, you know, just doesn't want to talk about this, is not interested, you know, is there something weird about that? And I say, no, I don't think there is, because it is a very frightening, I think for me it was very, very frightening to think about coping with that kind of initial rejection. Even though I was 3 weeks old when I was adopted, psychologically I think it was there, and I was real afraid of being rejected again if I ever tried to come.
Yeah, okay, and that's another thing. We have friends at home that have have four adopted children. It was a pair of twins, and the twins set out to find their birth mother, and she didn't want anything to do with them. I can't help but think that has to be very, very hard. The single girl, her mother just accepted her with open arms. And that even more so, you know, they had different mothers. Mm-hmm. And it has to be really earth-shaking.
Yeah.
I think the hardest thing for me was the transition from the real positive feelings we had about adoption, that we really wanted our children, and we really believe that God was really part of this process of placement. All the positive things with that, there still was that other side we talked about a couple days ago, the rejection side, and how to put that together, and how to try to, when we don't have very much information, how to really help our children understand the reasons for relinquishment, and we don't have anything on that.
Yeah,
it's
hard. Yeah.
That to me was a real difficult thing, and my husband, I was sharing with him a struggle with that, and he said, but that's important, because pain and rejection, suffering, are part of life. Mm-hmm. And these children mm-hmm. will just have to learn, you know, maybe they're learning it in a different way early on, but they're going to be learning to deal with pain and rejection and suffering. And that's part of life, and it touches other people that are in pain and suffering, might make them more sensitive to that. And he said that shouldn't be something we approach with fear, but with opportunity to how do you work through these issues. Mm-hmm. And that really changed it for me, totally. Changed entirely my feelings about it, in terms of talking about it, and the questions would come, particularly to Christy.
One other thing I'd like to say before closing is that also I know a number of you have come to me this week and asked me about how to help your child search if the child doesn't, your adult adoptee doesn't come to you and ask you to help with the search. And I just want to say that I think a lot of adult adoptees will not ask you to help them with the search. And that has nothing to do with you as parents being inadequate or something. I think that there are two things to that. I think, first of all, a lot of adult adoptees have to do it on their own mm-hmm. because it's their search. Mm-hmm. And number two, I think there is a fear connected with that you, who are their primary parents,
definitely,
are going to reject them if they make a decision, and they don't want to hurt. They generally say, I don't want to hurt my adoptive
yes.
parents, but I think that cuts the other way. I think it is a fundamental fear that even as an adult, that you might turn away from them and will not be supportive, and they'll lose two families in a way by doing that. So I just wanted to mention that as well, because I hear that from adoptees. Yeah. Yes.
My question is would you adopt?
Yes. Okay. I would. I would do it with a great deal of not fear necessarily, but understanding the incredible conflicts that are likely to result from it. But yes, and I would never say I'm against adoption. I would never say that. But I think I would enter it with a great deal of consideration about
what lies ahead. I want to thank you all so much for coming to these sessions. I have learned so much from you. It's really been a lovely experience. Thanks so much.
Thank you.